Hello, world, and welcome to another episode of the PO Show. That's Polar Opposites, right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Big T, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, my friend, your friend, soon to be everybody's friend, none other than Mr. Cool Hand Phil. Dr. Phil, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic tonight. I know we say this probably about six times a year, but this truly is one of the greatest times of the year, right in the middle of the NBA Finals, so I can't wait to break these first two games down. But I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I've got no complaints. You said it right. It's right smack dab into a dogfight that is the NBA Finals, and to help us break that down, as always, glad to have Indiana's own Indiana Hall of Famer, Ron Rutland Jr. Ron, how are you, sir?
Doing great, doing great. Very excited about the show. Thanks for having me.
Oh, definitely a pleasure. All ours. There's a lot going on, some auxiliary pieces in the sports world, but we won't spend much time talking about it. I hate that we can't devote a portion of this show to the greatness, the dominance that is Serena Williams, as she captures her 20th career Grand Slam title with the French Open. And then one of the things that I'm glad we don't have time to talk about Hope Solo, as new reports emerge that she somehow verbally attacked the police officers, and everybody's acting like that's such a big deal, yet nobody's talking about the young black teenagers that were verbally assaulted by a police officer down in Texas. But hey, save that for another show. We do sports here. We'll start the show the way we do every single night. As adults, you make plenty of decisions all day, every day. We're just glad you decided to spend a little bit of time with us right here on the PO Show. In the opening, Dr. Phil Coolhand mentioned that we're smack dab in the middle of this NBA playoffs. And when we last spoke, we knew when we got back together, we would have a better feel for how this series was going to go. But what we didn't know if it was going to be a 2-0 split, or was it going to be 1-1. And I'll be honest with you, I for one thought when we got back together, Phil, we'd be talking about a 2-0 split. And I can tell you, I didn't know who that 2-0 split would be. I didn't know if it was going to be the Warriors up 2-0 or if it was going to be the Cavaliers, but I personally am shocked that we're sitting here on the night before the third game of the playoffs, and it's all tied up, one game apiece. Did that strike you as odd? Did you expect to be where we are right now?
No, I did not expect to be at 1-1. I mean, I thought Golden State, especially after game one, mm-hmm. Like we discussed last week, that we thought both teams had really come out strong, that we would get a very competitive game one, not the game that everyone talks about the teams trying to fill each other out. I didn't think we would see that. I thought we would see the game in which we did, where LeBron came up, carried over his performance in previous series to this series, had a big, huge game in that game one. So after that first game, I was really surprised that the Warriors were not able to kind of settle down. But they did seem a little nervous the first game. They kind of got into it the second half. Klay Thompson had a big second half. That's what led them to the victory. And, of course, Steph Curry showed up big time in the overtime series and really put the game away. So I thought after seeing that, that they would be two games nil after the first two games, but I was really shocked that the Cavaliers were able to bounce back in the way they did, especially after losing Kyrie Irving. Not that mm-hmm. Those guys couldn't step up, but that's more of an emotional blow
sure.
that I really didn't know if they'd be able to overcome that quickly. And so, I don't know, I really thought the first, it would be 2-0 after that, so I was really shocked that we were 1-1, after Kyrie Irving went down.
Okay, and speaking of LeBron James and the Cavaliers, Ron, you had mentioned last week that you felt like LeBron was going to come out sharp, and it appears that he did. 44 points in that first game, a triple-double, in the second game. So based on what you thought you'd see from LeBron, and we definitely got that, are you surprised that we're tied up 1-1 after the first two games?
Yeah, I have to say, I am surprised, not shocked, but I am surprised. I mean, kind of, you know, recruiting, especially when I see, you know, after game one, you know, that Kyrie was pretty much done for the series. You know, I knew if Golden State came out and played, you know, any form of fashion like they did in game one, you know, that, you know, this was going to be a 2-0 lead going back to Cleveland. Unfortunately, Golden State, in my opinion, showed their youth.
Okay.
And, well, you know what? I'll just break it down to say Steph Curry showed his youth.
Oh, okay.
In the game. You know, look, I've been there. You know, you have an off shooting night. But at the same time, I felt like, you know, you missed enough shots early to know, okay, I don't need to keep taking the same kind of shots maybe that I normally take in rhythm if I'm not in a rhythm.
Okay.
So, you know, and that's what was frustrating for me to watch in that second game, because now, you know, there are definitely times in the game where, you know, you're down, you're trying to get back in it. And I thought, you know, he took a lot of quick shots. Like I said, these are shots you normally take. But at the same time, you've missed five or six in a row. So then when you get back in the game, what do? You go to the basket.
Right.
You get a layup.
Right.
You know, if we want to claim that him and Kyrie are two of the best ball-handling guards in the NBA,
right,
then when you're having an off shooting night from outside, guess what? Break your man down and get to the basket and get some easy layups.
Exactly.
It did that to get back in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Going to overtime, and then what do you first thing you do? You resort back to shooting jump shots that you hadn't been hitting all night.
Right.
And to me, that showed the youth and inexperience at that time, which, you know, put them in a position now that it's a 1-1 game.
Yeah, that, you know, in terms of what we expected to see, you know, if again, you know, last week I was trying to help you out, Cool Hand, and telling you what you could expect with your new love and the old love would get together. And I even and said one of those things is that your new love was going to be trying so hard to impress that they might find themselves in moments where they were just doing a little too much. And Ron's kind of alluded to that with his shot selection. I have to agree there in terms of when I look at these first two games and I say what went right, what went wrong, that's definitely one spot. The shot selection from Steph Curry, I definitely have to put that in the category of gone wrong. If you think back to the previous series with Golden State and Houston, there was a game where Steph started out pretty much the same way. The three ball wasn't dropping for him. The long twos weren't going in. And he stopped shooting them and then started driving the basket. Got himself in a rhythm, got himself going, and also got the defense to loosen up a little bit, being so concerned with his driving in the lane, freed up some things on the wings for other players, and then freed up some things for himself. And he was able to come back to the three ball later in the game. And as Ron alluded to, I too was disappointed that there was never a concentrated focus of trying to establish something going inside. Now, it wouldn't be a show if I didn't talk out of both sides of my mouth. That could be because Mozgov, I mean, he's a force to be reckoned with, and he's not leaving the lane because there's no reason to. You know, we talked about it in last week when we looked at the individual matchups, and let's face it, although Bogut is a skilled big man, from an offensive standpoint, you're not worried about him doing anything away from the basket, and quite honestly, so far in the series, you're not worried about him doing anything inside the paint. His offense has been from the free throw line. So, you know, Mozgov can just camp out in the lane for the most part. which definitely clogs things up for Curry or anybody else that wants to try to make a play at the rim as long as Moskov's in play. So that's some of the things that's going wrong or going right. And quite honestly, guys, you almost have to say, depending on what coast you live on, it's really going to depend on how you look at this series. And what I mean by that, there's some people, I guarantee you, that are in Cleveland right now saying, oh, man, we could easily be up 2-0. Man, if Shumpert's shot had a fail at the end of regulation in game one, we'd have a 2-0 lead. And vice versa, there's folks sitting out in Oakland right now saying, oh, man, we easily could be 2-0. Man, if we just had that turnover late, or if we had to foul Delly down the stretch, we'd easily be up 2-0. So what I want to know from you guys, which is right? Which team legitimately, in your opinion, should be up 2-0? I'll start with you, Phil.
That's a good question. That's pretty tough. I would have to go with Golden State just because they're the best team in the NBA. They had the best record. To me, they had a tougher road to get to the finals, and just their play, you know, it's not, I don't know, I mean, winning in overtime, that was pretty dominant. Mm-hmm. So coming off of that, Kyrie Irving, you know, was injured. To me, you have to stiff on their throat at that point. So I feel like they had a better chance to be 2-0, or they had the better case to be made that they should be 2-0. Because, you know, LeBron shot, you know, a lot of people say he should have went to the basket. I agree. You know, he kind of took a fadeaway three-pointer. Shumpert, that would have been a crazy shot, you know, to basically he caught the rebound in the air. He jumped up and then shot it. So that's a tough shot. It's not like he missed an easy layup.
Right.
And then you look at, you know, like you said, the foul on Dellen Adoba. I really didn't see that as being a foul. I mean, he basically did a volleyball set with his putback, you know, and basically they were going at each other. It was a loose ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look at that as incidental contact, and for them to call that with, I don't know, how much time was on the clock?
Well, at least enough for another possession, another 10 seconds maybe, at least another possession.
So, you know, really, that's right, because they called the timeout, went down the other end, Steph Curry, you know, shot the air ball.
Right.
So I just feel like that with them being at home, winning game one so dominantly in the overtime, you know, which could be deflating in itself, and then you lose Kyrie Irving, you know, when you add all of that up, to me, especially if you'd ask me after game one, you'd be like, yeah, definitely, they'll win the second game and go back to Cleveland 2-0. That's the case I'd make it for as a team that had a better shot at that.
Okay. Ron, same question. Which team legitimately has the claim that they should be 2-0?
I'm going to say Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
As definitely is thinking they should be up 2-0.
Okay.
From my point of view, you know, the one thing that you want to have is the last shot.
Right.
And especially if it's the last shot to with a tie game,
to win it.
Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, Cleveland was in position both games at the end of regulation to basically, you know, have the shot to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron, you know, hey, you know, he took a shot. He went with, you know, what he felt comfortable, tried to recreate, you know, the magic he did earlier in the season, and that what he went with. But the fact that he had that opportunity to knock down a shot to win, you know, to win game one, he'll remember that. Game two was the same scenario.
Mm-hmm.
He had the ball in his hands for the last shot of the game to win the game. And as a player, that's what you want. You know, so regardless of what happened in the overtime for me, I would, you know, I know as me as a player, especially in that first game, I would look back and say, you know what, you know, I should have won that game then. Mm-hmm. That game should have been over with. So I'm going to say Cleveland definitely makes the case. So should be up two games.
And in game two, though, Golden State had the ball you know, at the end. They had a chance to get the last shot, and Curry had the turnover. So in game two, they did not, actually, they did not have a chance, the Cavaliers, to have the last shot. Golden State did, and they made a very costly turnover.
Was that in the regulation?
Well, the second game did not go to overtime. Well, that's right. That was in, that was at the end of the game. They got the ball with 4 seconds left. They did not have a timeout. I think LeBron hit, I thought he hit a free throw, and then I thought he threw it, Steph Curry threw it away. He was trying to throw it to,
right.
I believe it was Thompson,
right.
on the edge. But they had about 4 seconds left, and the Shumpert, I guess, got a hand on it, and Clay kicked it, and it went to the middle of the court.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that happened in the overtime, so I'm looking at it more from the standpoint of...
Oh, okay, yeah. I think
they're in the regulation that I've
right.
seen.
Right. Obviously, both teams could make that claim that they should be up 2-0. But I think I got to ride with Ron on this one. I actually feel like the Cavaliers have the better case, simply because if you watch these games, Cleveland has been in control of literally every quarter of every game. They are either tied or winning at the half. They're winning at the end of the first and second quarters, and typically at the start of the fourth quarter in these games, Cleveland has the lead. They've been able to do in these first two games what other teams have not been able to do all season long or all playoff long, and they've been able to hold the Warriors the best offense, the most efficient and the highest scoring offense in the league. They've been able to hold them to under 100 points through regulation. The only way that that Golden State has scored over 100 points has been overtime. In both instances. So, you know, I think if you're Cleveland, I think you're saying to yourself that, we clearly should be up 2-0. You know, you figure you got 44 points from your star. You were able to get, a triple-double from him in the second game, although that game was won. In a game that you get 44 from LeBron, and Kyrie Irving's able to give you another 20, 23, you got to win that game. You know, so I think when you look at it on paper, you know, Cleveland can say they should definitely be up too. And I think if you're the Warriors, you're really not mad that that the series is tied at one, because you say to yourself, our star wasn't there at all. And in fact, quite honestly, Steph Curry hasn't gone off yet. I mean, he had a pedestrian, and I know that sounds odd to say, but he had a pedestrian 26 points in game one. And of course, he didn't even score 20 in game two. So the fact that they were able to get a win in a game that he only scored 26 points, I think they're pleased that the series is split at this point. That second game, obviously, you know, and Ron, I think you kind of was alluding to it, talking about some of the adjustments, whether it be mental, making a mental picture or muscle memory, even if you want to call it that, that LeBron was making from game one to game two as it relates to the final shot. But let's take a look at that on a little broader scale in terms of the adjustments that were being made from game one to game two, and even during the games. We neglected to look at, we were talking about matchups last week, we neglected to look at the matchups between these two rookie coaches. And I know this has got to be a first, or something that hasn't happened in a long time, that two rookie head coaches would meet in the NBA Finals. That's got to be something that hasn't happened in a gazillion years, if not the first time that it's happened, period. And let's also, I think it's interesting to note, that these two coaches are somewhat familiar with each other, because Steve Kerr had actually given an offer to Blatt to join his coaching staff. And he had given him that offer prior to Atlanta making an offer to, I'm sorry, prior to Cleveland making an offer. And it just so happened that the Cleveland offer came through, and Steve Kerr said, "Hey, dude, you know, you got to do what you got to do. No hard feelings." Because Blatt had every intention of joining Steve Kerr at Golden State. So I said that to say this. These two guys are obviously somewhat familiar with each other, at least in their coaching philosophies and their style of coaching. But let's take a look at that head-to-head matchup there. I will say, and Phil, you may have said something to me about this earlier, you know, I'm fond of saying that in a seven-game series, your coach is going to win you at least one game. There's going to be a game in a seven-game series that you can point to and say, well, the coach won that game for us. And I had questioned Steve Kerr's ability with X's and O's, and you felt like that he was going to be okay in that regard. And I got to give it to you, spot on. I've been really, really shocked. Well, I guess I shouldn't say shocked. I've been really shocked at, for a first-year head coach, I've been really shocked at his situational coaching and his ability to draw up the perfect plays after timeouts. It seems like every time Golden State takes a timeout, Coach Kerr has the perfect play. Am I wrong about this? Are you guys seeing this the same way?
I mean, I've been a little bit disappointed in the finals with Kerr than what I saw in the first three series that they had going through the Western Conference. I mean, it just seemed like in the other series, it was more evident. It just seemed like from game to game, he made better adjustments. Now, look, we're only two games into it.
Mm-hmm.
So he has plenty of time to make other adjustments. And I saw him in other series, you know, where it took more than two games for him to make adjustments for, you know, Golden State to really put their foot on the pedal. But I just have not seen I see what you're talking about when they come out of a timeout, you know, and get a backdoor cut to someone for an easy basket. So he has been present, he has been there, but I'm curious to see, it's a good point that you brought up, because I am curious to see how this series is going to unfold in Game 3. To me, Game 3 is going to be the most important game since, of course, Game 1. I just feel like every odd game is the most important, 1, 3, 5, and 7. You know, whoever wins those games consistently, it seems like those are the ones that end up winning the series. So very intrigued how these coaches conduct themselves going forward.
Okay, now one of those adjustments, Phil, that you might be speaking of in the earlier series is, you know, it's no secret that his being Steve Kerr, his secret weapon had been his small lineup. Anytime he needed a run, or they needed to make a comeback, or they needed points, or they needed to change the tempo, Steve Kerr was able to pull that lever, push that button by bringing in his small lineup. My question to you, Ron, it seemed to be effective in game one, but when they went with the small lineup in game two, again, unless I'm watching, if I'm seeing it wrong, tell me I'm seeing it wrong, but it appeared that Blatt had a decent counter move for when they went small. What did you see from Blatt and the Cavaliers when Golden State tried to go small?
I mean, you're spot on. You know, his kind of move was to match and go small.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes, you know, you kind of sit back and, you know, I'm looking at it and I'm saying, okay, you know, is that what you want to do? Do you want to match them, or do you want to continue to play your game?
Mm-hmm.
And play big, because now, you know, you might struggle a little bit on the defensive end, but at the same time, when you go back down on offense, you know, they wouldn't have an answer for Mozgov down low.
Right.
So, but you know what? You know, he went with strategy. You know what? We're going to go small, you know, and match up with him. And it seemed to play in his favor.
Mm-hmm.
Because even offensively, you know, when you put James Jones on the floor, I mean, the guy can shoot the basketball.
Yes.
So you got to, you know, you got to be accountable for him. You can't just leave him, you know, which allows LeBron to do different things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at first, I remember when I first saw it, I was like, man, I don't know, but I got to give him some kudos for that, for making that adjustment, sitting Mozgov down, and rolling with it, and that, you know, seemed to work out for him.
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, they got 23 good minutes from James Jones. Two of four from three-point land, 8 points for the game. But maybe the biggest number is a plus 22 when James was on the floor. So James Jones, that is, when he was on the floor, there was a plus 22. So, yeah, it would indicate that indeed may have been the exact right move to make. Now, there was another move that I think Blatt made, and I don't know if he did it on purpose. And I don't know if it was just a function of the way the game was being played. Another thing that has played in Coach Kerr's favor is his deep bench. I've said it a million times, and it's been well documented, that I believe that Golden State's second unit is as good of a second unit anywhere in the land. And, in fact, I had made the statement that they could probably match up with the ones from most clubs. Well, in the second game, I don't know if you guys noticed, but when Coach Kerr went to his bench and he brought in the second unit, Blatt and the Cavaliers stayed with their first unit. And he answered my question about whether the twos could compete with ones. They cannot. Cleveland kept their ones on the floor and made Golden State's twos look like twos. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't nice. It wasn't what we're used to seeing. You know, normally when those twos come in, the tempo changes. They're running up and down the floor. And like you were saying, maybe it was because Mozgov is still in there and they can't do anything with him. But, I mean, Barbosa, even Iguodala to some degree, I mean, they couldn't get off like we'd seen them get off in past games. And at first I'm watching and I'm going, man, what's going on with my favorite second unit? And then I started looking at their matchups. I was like, oh, wait, LeBron's still in there. Oh, Mozgov is still in. Oh, Shumpert. I was like, whoa, they still got all their starters in. And like I said, I don't know if that was by design or it was just a function of the fact that, you know, Blatt had decided that, hey, we're just going to, you know, there's going to be a lot of minutes played with the starters. But I don't know if you guys had noticed that or not, but he pretty much, in my opinion, he pretty much nullified the second unit, the effect of the second unit, and kind of forced Kerr's hand to kind of have to get the starters back in, maybe even sooner than he wanted them to. And I'm not saying that fatigue necessarily is going to be an issue with Golden State because the bench is a little bit deeper and they seem to be younger, fresher legs, that sort of thing. But I am saying it definitely got them out of their normal rhythm of, okay, you're going to play the first quarter, then you guys are going to come in. You know, the way the games had been going, I felt like it disrupted that to some degree and, again, kind of gave Cleveland the upper hand.
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of like any other sport, you know, we say take it one game at a time. I think a lot of times we overreact. But, of course, you know, you wouldn't expect the second group of – the Warriors to really match up with the first team of any high caliber team. And we're talking about the finals. This is not the regular season where guys take games off and the second group can come in. You know, they've been scratching and calling to get on the court and they're able to get their chance. This is the finals.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, game three, we could see that second group, you know, really just take off again. And then, you know, you're right back to where you are saying, oh, you know, I told you these guys could play. I told you they could match up with anyone. One, so you know, I wouldn't overreact from one game to the next because again, that's what makes everything so intriguing is that it seems like these games and our opinions and you know the things that we believe and hold dear, they can change on a dime just because someone or some player or some tactic of the coach pays off and or they come up big. And, you know, we're sitting here amazed, like, oh, wow, how did we not see this coming?
Right.
But to me, the biggest thing, I mean, I don't know if we can change gears. To me, the biggest player that I've been disappointed in, and I think he is the key, and I think he was the key in series before, but it's the play of Draymond Green.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I was watching the game last night, I'm saying this guy is playing like garbage.
Mm.
I think he had his first field goal came – it may have been in the overtime. And it's like, how do you go the whole game? You know, you're the heart and soul. That's what they – that's not my term. That's what the team has delegated to him, the heart and soul of the team. and had terrible turnovers. You know, he had Bogut going into the alley-oop. That's a play that they run all the time. He threw it about 6 feet over a seven-footer's head. Just a terrible pass.
Mm-hmm.
Then he had another one. Same look, I think it was to Barnes, threw it over his head. He's not finishing any shots at the basket. You know, it's like he's trying to draw contact instead of just going up strong. To me, in the NBA, you ought to go strong to the basket. If you get fouled, you're going to the line. If you don't get fouled, you're going to make the shot or you're going to get your shot blocked. So, but to me, you should never, if you're that big, you should never try to avoid the contact or try to draw contact. Just go strong to the basket and finish the shot. And he is finishing nothing at the basket. He's not contributing anything. And I think if you see him step up big in this game three, I think he could turn the series around. If he doesn't, if he stays silent, if he stays quiet, then I think the Cavaliers will have a chance to go up 2-1. And then it's a really interesting series at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying about Draymond. He's definitely been, there's definitely been a drop-off, but I don't know if I can, I don't know if I can necessarily put that on him. Because at some point we have to look at Cleveland and what they're doing to cause that, right? I mean, it's not so much, in my humble opinion, it's not so much that Draymond Green is just not getting it done as it is that he's going up against those trees in Tristan Thompson and Timofey Mozgov. And look, you know, what do you want him to do? I mean,
well, if you look at other series, I mean, he went up against Gasol against the Grizzlies. He's gone up against Dwight Howard. I mean, he's gone up against tall guys and had a lot of success. And I don't think that it's anything, I don't think Mozgov is just, you know, this unworldly player that is just, you know, wreaking havoc in the lane. I don't think Tristan Thompson is just, you know, ungodly where he's doing things that Howard and Gasol, you know, these guys that are all-stars, that they're not capable of doing. I think it's him, and I've seen him go through funks. You know, that's why I'm not, you know, saying that there's no way he can bounce back, because I've seen him have games like this. I think in the first two games against the Rockets, same deal. He was completely unproductive. So I think it's more on him, and I see what you're saying about Tristan Thompson. The guy's tall, the guy's big, and I'm sure he does his job on the defensive end, but I don't think he's just any more special than any of the players that they face going to the finals. To me, he has to step up at some point and say, hey, I don't care if I am going up against Tristan Thompson or Mozgov. I have to have an impact on this game, and I have to make my presence known to help the team out. And I look for him to do that. I don't think it's incapable. I don't think the Cavaliers can deny him that. He just has to, I guess, make his mind up and get the job done.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to jump in and kind of say something. You know, what I'm noticing with him, you know, well, I thought that he made a difference throughout the season, you know, early in the playoffs, was with his outside shot.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
His ability to shoot, you know, the tray ball, you know, bring the, you know, opposing four man away from the basket, having to guard him. And so I don't know if it's, you know, because, you know, he has experienced from, you know, I'm looking at college now, you know, tournament type of runs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they won a championship while he was in college, but I think they went pretty deep. I think there was a Final Four team. So I'm thinking that, you know, as they have gotten deeper, I almost want to think that his train of thought on his shot selection,
yeah,
and kind of saying, you know what, you know, me taking that quick three or that shot on the break, you know, yeah, I was free-flowing kind of during the season, but now, you know, that's not as good a shot. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't want to take that shot. So those opportunities are not there for him, because he wasn't, you know, just a post-up guy, we're going to throw it down low and you're going to bang and score.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of his things came off of, you know, him pushing it on the break, kicking it to somebody, or they swing it around and he'd be, you know, top of the key wide open, he'd shoot the J.
Right.
So he's lost confidence in his jump shot, or he's selective to say, I'm not going to take that shot.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, he needs to take it,
at least to make them say, you know what, we got to guard it. Even if he misses one or two. You know what I mean? So I think that, you know, hopefully Coach Glenn is here about that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And Terrence, I want you to comment on that. Have you noticed the difference? Because we've seen it with Green, and then Curry, he even made the comment last night that he was, I think he said hesitant, or a word similar to that where they're not going after, they're not taking the strikes when they see them. They're kind of holding back, making sure they don't have a turnover or, you know, not going for the home run play. But to me, that is what their mentality is built on. You know, you don't need to change yourself now. Have you seen any type of change in the Warriors that, you know, would concern you? Or do you think they're playing the right type of basketball? And I mean as far as their aggressiveness and shot installation, things like that.
Sure, definitely. Well, first, on Draymond, I think we may be, a couple of things may be at play. It may be the factor that we were just so enamored with their style of play and ball movement that we felt like Draymond was having a bigger impact than he really was. Because if I look at what is his general statistics, I mean, he averages about 11.5 points a game, and sure enough, that's right where he is. I mean, in game one, he was 12-6. Game two, he was 10-10. So that's right there. You split the difference. That's his 11 points a game average. So he's, from an offensive standpoint, at least with the points he's scoring, whether it be through free throws or from the field, he's still generating about the same type of offense that he always has. I will say, I think, in terms of his timidness, you know, he's often in foul trouble quick in these two games. And I think that has some hesitation. You talk about him going to the hole strong. You know, he's not getting the benefit of any calls, all right? And he seems to just, you know, from the tip-off to be in foul trouble. So that may have something to do with his hesitancy. As far as the rest of the team, particularly Steph and Clay, what I'm noticing, you know, we talked about it briefly last week. We were, again, going through the matchups, and I shared the stat about Steph Curry's shooting percentage of three-pointers with the contested shots versus the uncontested shots, and then compared that with the shooting prowess that of J.R. Smith, how his percentage seemed to not differ whether they were contested or uncontested. But Steph Curry was a dramatic drop-off with his contested threes, but extremely high on his uncontested. And I feel like, for whatever reason, and Ron, I, you know, again, I would defer here, because, hey, at the end of the day, I'm watching, and I'm just a fan watching basketball. So I would refer to you, defer to you on these, this point. It seems like Steph Curry isn't coming off the screens as clean as he was in other series. Now, you know, the whole world is going crazy about Dele's defense. Oh, he got all up into Steph and shut him down. You know, I'm not even, whatever, because Klay Thompson was having a field day on him. So if his defense is that good, why wasn't he shutting Klay Thompson down? Because Klay was just going to town, okay?
Yeah.
In fact, and in game one, Curry had him on skates so bad he couldn't even, I'm talking about Dele again, had him on his skates so bad he couldn't even stay in the game longer than 9 minutes. He was a liability. So miss me with all of this about, oh, he's, you know, Golden State kryptonite, and he's a lockdown defender. Shut up. He got him on an off night. But what I am saying, and it may be something that Cleveland's doing, and if it is, you know, let me know. But Steph isn't coming off of screens nearly as clean. You know, if you look back in the other series, he would do that little curl route, come off of a screen, and there's not a defender within 5 feet of him. And that's not, I'm not seeing that happen with the frequency. In fact, at one play they ran a double screen. It took a double screen for him to get enough breathing room to launch his three. That shot did go in. They showed it again in slow motion, and you could see it, that it actually took a double screen. The single screen just wasn't enough. It took a double screen for him to get open enough. Are they doing, they being Cleveland, are they doing anything that's disrupting the normal offense? And are you seeing that, that Steph's just not coming off as clean as he had been in previous series?
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing that. I mean, you know, the easy adjustment is the defender, the man, you know, if you're guarding the man who's setting the screen, you know, your job is to step up and be there when Curry is coming around, whether he's curling, flaring, whatever. Your job is to be there as the help defender, because obviously, you know, being a defender guarding Curry,
mm-hmm.
you know, it only takes, you know, 1 split second and he's open.
Exactly.
Come off the screen. So you got to step up, make him catch it, make him see you there, because usually the screen, you know, with Golden State, you know, when Bogut is on the floor, if he's setting the screen, he's a non-threat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even if you come up, step up, and Curry kicks it to Bogut, all he's doing is turning, looking to see who else he can pass it to instead of being an offensive threat on the floor.
Right.
So, you know, they are making that adjustment. They're not going to let him come off clean and get a clean look. Now, on the other hand, I also see Curry settling when he does get a clean catch. That he settles, he's so busy looking for the three that he doesn't realize that he can beat the man off the dribble.
Right.
Because they're, you know, they, if they are a step slow, you know, they're trying to run him off the line, but he's not taking advantage to get to the basket.
Right.
So, you know, I'm like, I'm watching him, I'm looking at him, I saw opportunities where I thought, you know, boom, guy got there late, he could have just blew by him, you know, maybe now he takes a 15-footer, Instead, he's so busy trying to look for that three, now he doesn't have anything.
Yeah.
And I saw a lot of time on fast breaks. He's pushing it. I thought he had a chance to beat his guy. He stops, looks for the three. They step up. Now they have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was a similar type of player that could shoot as well as handle the ball.
Okay.
I was going to post this on Facebook last night. My question is, you know, if you handle the ball as well as you do,
mm-hmm.
break guards down as well as you can,
okay.
you don't need screens.
Mm.
You bring the ball up and you break your man down. You can get the shot any way you want. Do we see it?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to come off, you know, pick and roll screens and double down screens. To me, it's like, why?
Mm.
You know, to me, it takes him. He doesn't become the playmaker that we see.
Mm-hmm.
When is he the most dangerous? Yeah, when he's knocking down shots, but also when he's penetrating, they're helping, and he's finding guys.
Exactly.
I'm almost curious. I haven't looked. How many assists has he had? Any?
I know in the second game he was definitely off on it. I mean, his stat line was pretty tragic. So in the second game, like I said, he only had 19 points in the second game, had 6 rebounds and 5 assists. And in the game before that, he had 8 assists in the previous. But yeah, just 5 assists in the second game, in the game that they lost. So not only is he, you know, he's not getting his points, but you know, the other things that he tends to do aren't there. No steals from him in the second game, which is, you know, he generally leads his team in steals, so no aggressive play there either. But if I go back to game one, you know, at least he had 2 steals, had 8 assists, had, you know, 4 rebounds, and, you know, the stat line just wasn't there in that second game. Not very aggressive offensively or defensively, Steph Curry there. But, you know, like Phil said, you know, it's only game 2, right, of a 7-game series. So they'll definitely have an opportunity to make some adjustments. There'll be some things that I'm sure both coaches will point out to their team to help them continue in this next series or in this next game of the series. Now, what I'm worried about, what I'm concerned about, or what I'm wondering is it seems that for whatever reason, you know, and they were talking about this on some of the shows today, and it was kind of silly, you know, saying that, oh, ever since Steph Curry fell on his head, you know, his shooting percentage has dropped off dramatically ever since the moment of that fall. You know, and then transversely, ever since Klay got bumped in the head, his shooting percentage is gone sky high. You know, he's making baskets and scoring points. Yeah, but what I am wondering is, will Klay Thompson be able to continue where he's at? Because he's actually gotten better since that closeout game in Houston. He's actually gotten to a spot now where he's contributing 20-plus points a game now on a regular, you know. And then, of course, he was leading all scorers for the Warriors, you know, in the losing effort, you know, in game two. I believe he had 34 points. You know, that's the most he's had all playoffs long, you know, back to what, you know, the Klay Thompson that we're used to seeing, so to speak. So my question is, really, do you think, can Klay continue that level of play, and will, you know, and then Curry come along right beside him? Because if I look at shot attempts, there was definitely, and I mean, you know, Klay had 28 shot attempts, Curry had 23, you know, obviously Klay made more of his shots than Steph did, but well, you know, you gotta, I guess this is what I'm saying, you gotta figure that Steph's, that was an off game for Steph Curry. He'll get back to him. His shots will fall. I mean, there were shots that literally were three-fourths of the way down the basket and came back out. You know, you got to figure that, you know, the next time they play, those shots are going to go in. But will Klay be able to continue to be as aggressive as he was? It seemed like his shots were, I mean, his release in game two was so quick. I haven't seen him shoot like that since the regular season. Matter of fact, the last time I saw him shoot like that was when he scored the 42 points, the 27 points in a quarter or whatever it was. So that's my big question. Can Klay keep that up and bring Steph with him here in the next game? What can the Splash Brothers? I guess that's the real question. Will the Splash Brothers ever show up at the same time? That's the question.
I mean, the answer easily is yes. I mean, you just said it right there. You just answered it. Their name, their nickname is the Splash Brothers. You don't get that nickname for no reason. You get that because they're probably going to go down as the best shooting backcourt in the history of the NBA. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you mentioned, I think Klay Thompson had came in with the second group, mm-hmm. and you had asked, is that a coincidence? But no, it was not a coincidence. You know, now he had been off his game a little bit for, you know, a series or a series and a half, and then he came in and made some shots. But, you know, you asked, was it because he wasn't under the shadow of Curry? But, I mean, that's not true. I mean, we've seen these guys play for several years now where they're a 1-2 punch. I mean, they're like peanut butter and jelly. They just go together like that, and, you know, both of them, you know, get their shine, so... I think it was a coincidence that he had been off and then had gotten hot. I think it's probably two games he got hot when he came in with the second group to start the second quarter. But I don't know if Thompson can do what he did in game two. That was ridiculous. I mean, I was just sitting there laughing like that. I cannot believe this guy is making this many shots. And back to your point about Dele. Dele is not a defensive guru. Mm-hmm. Curry has seen much better defensive talent than Dylan Adoba. So I'm not worried about Dylan Adoba at all as far as the play of Steph Curry. But yes, I think these guys can get it together. A lot of those shots were in and out for Curry. I think he just had an off game. Just like Kerr said, you know, Kerr has played with Michael Jordan and
Tim Duncan.
He said those guys go through games like that where nothing that they shoot goes down. Now, I don't know if we ever saw Jordan go through that in the finals, but it happened. So I look for Steph Curry to bounce back. I think Klay Thompson has his game going to where he's going to be able to continue to make an impact on the game. And I think we'll see more of a more traditional game, a game that we all expected to see. We knew LeBron, or we hoped LeBron, was going to bring his A game. He definitely has. But we want to see the Warriors, you know, play their style of basketball so that this thing can be really interesting. But I will say, I have not enjoyed a final like this, and I mean, it's probably since Jordan was, you know, knocking buckets against the Suns and the Jazz. I mean, it has just been very, very entertaining for me to have two superstars like LeBron and Curry go at it. I've just been very pleased with the product that we have seen in these first two games. And the NBA Finals has never had the Finals open up, but the first two games have been in overtime. So not only are we having a great game, we're getting free, you know, extra entertainment, 10 minutes worth over these first two games. So it's just been very, very entertaining. I hope it continues.
Oh, no doubt about that. I haven't enjoyed a Finals this much since New York versus Houston, Patrick Ewing versus the Dream.
Oh yeah,
that right there, and look, and I'm a Lakers fan, okay, but that right there was the most entertaining NBA Finals that I can remember. I mean, that was a heavyweight fight every single night. Now you mentioned.
Do you miss big men being able to play like those two guys could play?
Look, and quite honestly, I'm glad you said that. That's actually why I'm kind of really liking what Cleveland's doing, because I've always said in my mind, if I was building a basketball team, I want a big, brawny 7-footer, and I'm just going to feed him till he can't take no more. And that's kind of, you know, at points in time, aside from what, you know, LeBron getting his own, I mean, that's what they're doing with Moskov. And look, it works. Those 17 points that they got from Moskov versus the 0 points that they got from Bogut, I mean, in a lot of ways, you can say that's the game. We talked about it in the preview before the series started. Anytime you get Moskov early, standing 2 inches from the basket, he's getting those shots, high percentage shots like that, that's just gravy buckets that you're getting. And, you know, like I said, they use him that way, you know, in short spurts. They don't go to him long, but, you know, you get 12, 13, you know, in that case, 17 points from him that way. Yeah, that's going to spell a win, I think, every single time. But, you know, like I said, and I like the way that the Cavaliers use him in that style of play of pounding it inside. But let's talk about LeBron real quick and his style of play and how it's so different from the first coming of LeBron in Cleveland, and how it's so different from Miami LeBron. And now this second coming LeBron, I mean, this is a completely different player. It's not a LeBron that we've ever seen. It's not the LeBron we saw in Miami. It's not the first LeBron. This is a completely different. And you know what? It may not be as pretty on the stat sheet in terms of his efficiency and his shooting percentage, so forth and so on. But for me personally, I'll take this LeBron all day long.
Yeah, I mean, if I can jump in right here, I would too. This is the LeBron that we all wanted probably the last 8 years. I don't know how long he's been in the league, probably about 10. But this is the LeBron that we've always said, you know, why can't this guy show up when they need, you know, someone to step up? Why can't he do it? Why does he, you know, come down and go 2.5 quarters without even taking a shot? If we would have seen this LeBron in Miami, they would have won 4 straight. Well, actually, they probably would have. His prophecy is not 1, not 2, not 3. Not for, you know, that probably would have come to fruition. Mm-hmm. But instead of, you know, we saw a more passive LeBron. And I don't know what turned the switch on. I don't know if it was just going back home and he's taking ownership of this team, whereas before it was, well, I'm just happy to be here. Or, you know, then when he went to Miami, it was just, well, you know, I gotta make sure I include Wade and these guys because they were highly touted as well. Mm-hmm. And then when he went back to Cleveland, it was a, hey, this is my team, this is my city, I'm taking ownership, you know, forget the naysayers, whatever. So now if you ask me, do I like it? I don't know if I can say that because his play has been so good and I'm rooting extremely hard for the Warriors, so I can't say I like it, but it is finally good to see LeBron, to me, for the first time, realize his true potential, you know, all of his potential, instead of, I feel like he was underachieving because of his style of play. Now I feel like he is the legitimate superstar, and he's playing like the best player in the world, and I think it's just great for basketball because people can tune in now and say, I want to see what LeBron is going to do tonight, and they're not going to go away disappointed. They're not going to go away with 13-point LeBron, and he only took, you know, 12 shots. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're able to tune in and see the best basketball player showcase his talents every night. So, yes, I am happy to see LeBron version 2015 instead of, you know, LeBron circa 2012. Mm. I'm very happy to see it.
What about you, Ron? Is this version of LeBron, you like that better than Miami LeBron?
I don't know, in my opinion, you know, over the course of years, we have seen this LeBron. We just have never seen it on a consistent basis. He'll show us one game or two.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, in a series.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we don't see it every game,
right.
Night in, night out. And he has, you know, I mean, now, well, he's a champion.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what it takes to win. He also understands, you know, what he has around him.
Right.
He can't be passive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if you guys pay attention, you know, the people that's surrounded on the bench. You know, he's got Mike Miller with him. He's got mm-hmm. James Jones. These are people he's already won championships with.
Right.
They already know how to be in his ear.
Mm-hmm.
Damon Jones is on the bench. Mm-hmm. One of his right-hand men from one of his first trips through Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
In his ear. He has a surrounding cast on and off the court that is letting him know this. We need this LeBron every night for
right.
this team to win.
Right.
You know, he doesn't have a Dwayne Wade to defer to.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like that. You got to put this team on your back. And he understands that. Of course, as a fan, I mean, I like to see the best player play like the best player.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, you want to see the talent. You know, I'm amazed, you know, with the way he has developed over the years with the, you know, with the jump shot.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's, you know, how many years has he been in the league? I mean, he's just now realizing now he can take guys on the block and punish them there.
Whew.
But, I mean, obviously, as a fan of the game, I mean, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's great for what he's doing.
Yeah. To answer your question, Phil, you know, what's predicated this type of play? Why now? And not to take anything away from him, I don't think it's so much that LeBron has decided, okay, now I'm going to be the man. Now this is my team. I think this version that we're seeing is clearly out of necessity. I think he would much rather be the distributor, get everybody involved, because I think that is his true personality. But I think what you're seeing night in, night out comes strictly from necessity. Hey, he wants that championship for Cleveland maybe more than any other player wants a championship for their city, for their hometown, for their organization. And I think that desire to accomplish that goal is so strong that out of necessity, this has been the creature that's been born right before our eyes. And yeah, I like to see, you know, this LeBron just beast and take over. Is it pretty basketball? No, not so much. I mean, you know, it's a bunch of ISO and, you know, and four other guys standing around watching like I'm watching. Excuse me. So that's not fun. But in terms of him shutting up the haters and the naysayers, oh, I love that. You know, and the part about it is funny. You know, I kind of asked that question, is this the LeBron that you want to see? And, it, you know, and it's funny, the, you know, and I've heard, you know, all the chatter going on over the past couple of days. Oh, yeah, we love this LeBron. We love this LeBron. You know, in the back of my mind, I chuckle because that's really not true. because everybody hated that Kobe. Because what you're seeing from LeBron in terms of taking the volume of shots and this, that, and the other, and you know, all of this isolation play, it's what everybody hates about Kobe. Oh, he don't pass. He doesn't do this, that, and the other. You know, and that's been Kobe's game. Goodness, excuse me. That's been Kobe's game his entire career. And he got hated for it, slammed for it. And now, finally, LeBron evolves into this version of himself that really, quite honestly, and I think I text this to you, Phil, at some point during the week. I mean, this has been for me, again, as a fan watching this has been a very Kobe-like performance in terms of his mentality, okay, the way he's approaching the game, you know, that he will do whatever. He ain't coming out. He's not sitting out. He's going to play every single minute. You want me to come out? I'm going to wave you off, you know, and I'm going to put the team on my back and get it done. And now he's being applauded for it when Kobe was always hated for it.
Well, and I'll tell you what the difference is, but let me go back and say about LeBron, and it may be out of necessity now, but that doesn't matter. I mean, there have been times where it was necessary for us to see this LeBron, and we didn't. I mean, the two that pop in my mind are the first finals they had when he was in Miami against Dallas. And once they got down, and that's when I saw the quit in him, you know, where he went the second half of the third quarter and fourth quarter, didn't take a single shot. I had to go back to look and see if memory serves. But I remember he did not play aggressive. He did not say, look, I'm gonna try to get this. They quit. And so there's been times where this LeBron needed to show up, and he didn't. So that's why I'm excited that it's showing up to Ron's point. And it's consistent, you know, because that was the question I had before this finals. Hey, we've seen how LeBron has played going through the Eastern Conference. Now we're in the finals. Is that same LeBron going to come out, or are we going to see old LeBron? So I'm just happy that he stayed consistent, put the team on his back. Now, the difference between this performance and what I've seen from Kobe is, to me, LeBron is doing this to win games. He's not doing this out of selfishness or ego, and I think that's the difference that I saw with Kobe. Kobe would play like this to the detriment of his team. It didn't matter even if they could prove to him, hey, look, man, you know, you're playing like this, it's hurting us. He didn't care. He wanted to just go out and play his style, and that was the only really knock that I had on Kobe, is that he just wanted to play that style, whether it led to winning games or not. And that's what I said. Kobe didn't really care about winning games. He just wanted to be the man. And I think they could have won more games if he had learned to play a different style of game. But you can't play with Kobe. Everyone that goes to L.A., what happens? They leave the next year. He's impossible to play with because he wants to be the guy, whether that means wins or losses. He just wants to be the man.
Dude, and look, and there's players on Cleveland that would leave and go to another team if they could, but don't nobody want them. So that argument is weak. But anyway, because you know,
with that, just people that dog Kobe for being the player that he is, you know, don't know basketball. So I'll just say that right there. Kobe, you know, and this is what, you know, what's funny, you know, how history kind of is, and with you know, Kobe's, you know, kind of grown up, and, you know, halfway through his career has been more of the social media, so we allow more to me, you know, more negative voices get heard more than maybe the positive voices through all of this, and Kobe was a mimic of Mike.
Right.
Really. So it makes me wonder if these same talking heads would have been watching Mike early in his career when he was not winning and taking the same volume of shots. That was Michael Jordan.
Yep.
And here you have Kobe, who played under the same coach, under the same offense, who allowed him to thrive in the same way. And he became, you know, a champion. But we don't look at Mike in that regard. And when Kobe's career is over, we won't look at him in that regard either. you know, I remember people saying, oh, man, Mike shoots a lot. You know, this, but he won.
Right.
And the same thing for me with Kobe. You know, when it's all said and done, the man was a champion. You know, I mean, did any superstars really go play with Michael?
Exactly.
Besides something that was already there, those guys, when they came in, they understood. You know, Ron Harper came, you know, he wasn't a superstar anymore. He was a role player.
Yep.
You know, Dennis Rodman, he was a, you know, he came in, understand, you know, I'm going to be a role player. Those guys came in because they wanted to win. You know, yeah, it's going to be tough to bring another superstar in with Kobe. And Kobe let go, 100, you know.
Right.
But you got to get the role players around him, them guys that say, you know what, I'm willing to do the dirty work, even though I know he's going to take a volume of shots and look to win.
Yeah.
But I don't think a lot of those shots led to it. The thing that I always go back to, if Jordan had a played with Shaq, I don't think Shaq would have had to go to Miami. But the comments that I made, and I think I know basketball, but the comments that I made about Kobe, I think the criticisms are fair. Kobe ran Shaq out. Even though that lowered his chances to win championships, he didn't want Shaq there because he wanted to be the man. If Jordan had played with Shaq, they'd have played together for 10 years and won 10 championships because Jordan was all about winning. That's why nobody is really knocking LeBron for all the shots that he's taken, because there are no other superstars there. And I know Jordan played with Pippen, but I don't think Pippen was the offensive prowess that Jordan was. I mean, he was more the defensive guru, so that's why it worked out better. But if there was another superstar there, a big man, a legitimate superstar like Shaq, they would have played together for 10 years because Jordan, all he wanted to do was win. He would do whatever it took to win. And that means he didn't have to take the last shot. That was fine. If they want to double team, that's fine. He's going to kick it out and let Paxson, Kerr, whoever knocked that shot down. He wanted to win. I don't think Kobe's number one priority was to win. I think Kobe's number one priority was to play the style that he wanted to play and hang with the rest. That's the only knock I had on him. I just don't think he can play with Dwight Howard. He can't play with Shaq because he can't shine the way he wants to shine.
Nah, man, you can't make a statement. You can't look at that boy's career and say he didn't care about winning. But that's a whole, we'll save that one for another day. But what I wanted us to get to in that segment, we brought up LeBron James and the way he's playing and the consistency, particularly, Phil. You brought that up. The question is, it is twofold. Will he be able to keep that consistency going, and what do you expect to see in Game 3? What's your prediction for Game 3? 46 minutes for LeBron in Game 1, 50 minutes in Game 2. Can he keep this pace up in Game 3, and what do you expect to see? Ryan, I'll start with you.
I mean, I think he can keep the pace up. I expect to see, you know, really more of the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like his aggressiveness. Does it mean that it might be the same point production? Not necessarily, but I think his aggressiveness to continue to say, you know what, stop me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, you know, if you try to, I'm gonna find everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't know, you know, maybe what Golden State would do differently defensively.
Is that the right move? I mean, the whole let LeBron get his and we worry about everybody else, is that the right strategy?
I don't know if it's the right strategy. My strategy would be, you know, make LeBron shoot jump shots.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Not give it to him,
mm-hmm.
but play him in a way that, you know what, I'm gonna cut the lane off.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, you know, I know kind of Kuyan kind of alluded to it where it looked like, you know, he said, you know, LeBron kind of just gave up or, you know, quit during that Dallas series.
Right.
To me, Rick Carlisle gave the blueprint on how to guard LeBron.
Sure.
Play zone.
Right.
Cut off the lane. Make him a jump shot shooter, which he wasn't as great a shooter then. He's a much better shooter now.
Right.
And take away those lanes. He wouldn't force it then.
Right.
He might force it a little bit now, but then he wouldn't. He's looking. He sees help defense. He's going to defer.
Right. Right.
And because the guys were already sitting in a position, versus, you know, now, you know, and I still can't believe nobody has ever went back and looked at that and said, you know what, let's try a little bit of kind of a zone. You know, don't hug your man that's so close. Mm-hmm. You know, now if they knock down a shot or two, okay, let's see what happens. One, let's make LeBron think. When he starts thinking,
right,
that's when he is not as effective. Mm. So, you know, that's an adjustment I would make, but I don't think we'll ever see it.
What do you think, Phil? Can he continue at this pace, 46 minutes in game one, 50 minutes in game two? And what do you expect as an outcome in game three?
I think that he can keep it up. And I'm with Ron. I mean, if he does start thinking, that's when, you know, we've seen LeBron's game turn into Charles Barkley's golf game. You know, he just got that hitch in it. He can't pull the trigger. But I don't agree with the pundits and those guys out there that are saying that this is going to give LeBron his. I think they have defended him, you know, very closely, but I would back up and make him take more jumpers, but I don't think they have made a decision to let LeBron score 45. I think LeBron is taking it. Mm. I think he's taking those 45 points and he's earning it. They're not giving him anything. I think he's just playing as the best basketball player in the world, you know, that's going to rival some of the greatest in the game. I think we are going to see a little bit more of the same. From what I've seen, I think that these Cavaliers are just like the Memphis Grizzlies. They want to turn the game ugly. They want to make it sloppy. They want to make it as awkward as they can for the Warriors, and they're doing that. But whenever we've seen that, we've seen teams do that to Miami. We've seen Chicago try to rattle them. We've seen Boston try to do those types of things when the Heat were considered a finesse-type team.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like those teams ever went out. So I feel like the Warriors will turn the corner here. It'll be kind of the blueprint they had against the Grizzlies earlier this year. And I think they win game three tomorrow night. So I think you're going to see more of the same. But I think the Warriors come out, play a little bit better, and who knows? It could be another overtime game. I think it's going to be very close, but I think the Warriors squeak out a very close contested win in game three.
Yeah, I think that I don't think that LeBron or the rest of Cleveland will be able to keep up the pace. I think they'll get weary midway through the third, and I expect a sloppy fourth quarter, particularly for Cleveland. Again, Golden State's deeper, so it won't affect them the same way. Cleveland will come out hot. They'll be at home. They'll have their home crowd. They'll play well through about two and a half, three quarters. But, man, the fatigue's going to set in. Shots will be missed. People will stop driving to the basket. And what I want to see, I don't know if we'll be able to get it done or not, but what I want to see from Golden State, I want to see Golden State get back to that run-and-gun mentality. And if they run them to death, if they pick up the pace and force Cleveland to match them and match their pace, getting out on the fast break, that sort of thing, they'll bring that that reckoning, so to speak, a little bit quicker. Instead of it taking all the way to the third, to the fourth quarter for their legs to run out on them, they might have their legs run out of them as early as late second quarter. Because remember, they had an extra day between game one and game two. Now they've got to travel and just one day to practice. So there's going to be a lot less time to recuperate, this, that, and the other. And you're talking about the entire team, okay, for Cleveland. The entire starting unit played more minutes than they'd ever had in any of these games. So I think with that being said, if Golden State will take advantage of that and use it to their advantage, I think they can run Cleveland ragged early in the game. And like I said, look for a sloppy fourth quarter. But I think the Warriors will come out victorious. And it could spell doom for the rest of the series. Because if you recall, after we get past these two games in Cleveland, it's that back and forth deal again. One day rest plus travel. And going from the East Coast back to the West Coast, when you're an East Coast team with one day rest, that's gonna take a toll. That's gonna be an effect. That's gonna have some type of effect on that team. Well, guys, hey, another great show. Appreciate having you on. that's pretty much all we've got time for tonight. But we will be back at this thing again next week, and we will know more about who our next NBA Finals champion will be when we reconvene. Hey, if you like this show and all others, please don't hesitate to look us up on iTunes or check us out on the show page at www.poshowradio.com. You've listened to just another episode of the PO Show with Big T, Cool Hand Phil, and Indiana Basketball Hall of Famer Ron Rutland Jr. So glad to have you. We'll do it again next week. Good night.